Welcome back. I'm happy that we're able to all learn Torah together. To all of you who are here, there is nothing that can compare to learning Torah b'chabura, to all of us being together and being able to be inspired together as a community. And to all of you who are joining us virtually, thank you for being here. I know that you are not yet comfortable coming back, but we're happy that you're able to join us in this venue. I hope that everybody has received the email of our recent updates of all the shiurim and all the programs that we're going to be having over the next couple of months. If anyone has not, you can feel free to talk to me afterward. I'm happy to send it to you. But there is so much opportunity that our community offers of learning Torah, of being inspired, of inspiring others, and being involved in very meaningful activity as Jews are supposed to be. So I hope that everybody will take full advantage. I actually am starting a new series. A number of people had asked for this. On Wednesday evenings, it's for men and women. A number of members of our community asked that I should give a shiur once a week from 8 to 8:30 on Wednesday nights. I don't know if that's a good time for everyone, a bad time for everybody. I'm not sure. It will be on Zoom as well. But I was asked to give a shiur called Rabbis and Responsa. They want to hear about a shaila that I happen to be working on this week. It's okay with me. I'm happy to share it. And I hope it's of interest to you. So Amir Toshem on Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m. That is for men and women. You can come with other family members. And we hope that we should be able to learn Torah together. Lahagdil Torah ulaha'adira. The topic of this morning's shiur, I know that it's listed and it's billed as a shiur on Pirkei Avos. But as we know, Pirkei Avos sometimes launches us into many different things. We've been studying Pirkei Avos for quite some time and we've gotten almost nowhere, which is great, which is really great. As I've said many times, it's a skula for arichas yamim. We should all have a long life to be able to continue to study in depth and to learn all kinds of different things. Something that we're going to talk about this morning is a topic that I think is extremely important. It's something, emunah and bitachon is something that is always relevant. But in particular, it's relevant when we experience, once again, the parshios of the life of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was the greatest ma'amin ba'Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this gives us a renewed opportunity every year when we read Parshios of Lech Lecha and Vayera and we experience the life and the challenge of Avraham Avinu, it gives us an opportunity to discuss these important issues that we need to think about all the time as a Jew should. So let us begin with what I think is the precept, the primary understanding, the tenet, and the presumptions that we have as Jews. What exactly does it mean to have emunah? Number one, Pasuk tells us in Sefer Tehillim, and it's something that we recite every Shabbos in the Pesukei Dezimra, Mishamayim hibit Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down from the heaven, Ra'a eskal b'nei ha'adam, and as he looks down, he's able to see everything that human beings are doing. Mimechon shifto hashkiach, we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lives in his own heavenly abode, in his own sanctuary. But from there he looks down, al kol yoshvei ha'aretz, down to every single creature that inhabits this world. Hayotzer yachad libam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created our hearts and our souls. Hameven al kol ma'aseim, and as a result of that, he understands everything that we do. Lahavdil, and again, it's not a good comparison, but it's somewhat of a comparison. A parent understands their child far better than anybody else will, at least when the child is younger. The child grows up in our home. We gave birth to these children. We, in some way, created them. We brought them into the world. We nurture them. And we understand them as a result of that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who created all of us, understands us. And that works in both directions. He understands when we make mistakes because he created us. The same way a parent understands when their child makes a mistake. Well, we know they have this kind of pre-existing condition. They have that kind of tendency. And it sort of makes more sense to us than it might make sense to an outsider. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at our world. But it's important to remember that that is the premise, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is manig es olamo. He is the one who runs our world. He's the one who created all of us. And he is attentive and totally involved and engaged in everything that happens. Like the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Mahashem mitzadei gaver. Every step that we take is destined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now you'll ask yourself, what about Bechira? Don't I have free choice to go here, to go there? It's a very good question. You need a very long time to answer that question. But the premise is that everything is destined and determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So much so that the Gemara Maseches Chulin writes, Ein Adam Nokef Etzbo Milamata, Ad sheyachriz ala milamala. When I go like this with my finger, so you think that that's just a reflex. You think it's what I'm just deciding to do. But the Gemara says, Ein adam nokef etzbosav milamata. I can't move my fingers. I can't move my hands down here on this earth unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that that's what I should be able to do. Rachmana litzlan. Look at people who suffer a stroke. And when they were able to do all kinds of different motions and movements and move around and move their eyes and move their hands and move different parts of their body, and suddenly it's just taken away in 1 second. That's what the Gemara means. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that I should have the ability to move my hands, to move my legs, to open my eyes, and that is what we make brachas for every single day. Emuna is so central. It's such an indispensable part of what it means to be a Jew, and it's so imperative that we take time to understand and to think about these issues and really appreciate what they're all about. So much so, the Gemara says in Maseches Makos, you know, we have a very complicated set of laws in the Torah. As we all are familiar, it seems that there are 613 mitzvos in the Torah. Taryag mitzvos. Everybody has heard that. Where does that come from? It's a very good question. The Gemara in Makos seems to say such a thing. But actually, the Rishonim debate, is that really a true number? Is it true that there are 613 mitzvos? So, again, a shir for another time. But the premise that we all work with is that there are 613 mitzvos. Now, it's hard to keep track. How many of us, if we were asked to list, without looking in a book, what are the 613 mitzvos? I think all of us would get stuck somewhere along the way, probably at less than 613. We would have a difficult time remembering, oh, what is it? Maybe it's this. Is this a mitzvah? Is it yes? Is it no? Is it a daraisa, derabanan, a minhag? You know, it's a good question. People would say, yeah, you have to wash before you eat bread. Yeah, that's a din derabanan. It doesn't even count. People would say, oh, I have to make brachos in the morning. That doesn't count either, because that's also midrabanan. So to come up with the list of 613 is not so simple. And the Gemara says, as a result of that, there were a number of great leaders who decided, let's try to streamline, let's try to categorize and classify what are the classifications or the categories of all the mitzvahs, and this way it will be easier for people to remember them. So the Gemara says that David HaMelech figured out how to boil it down to 11 categories. And David HaMelech taught his community that if you know these 11 doctrines, if you know these 11 principles, you will then really be able to master all of Torah, because all you need to remember is these 11 things and everything else falls under those categories and it's easy. Yeshayahu HaMelech said, you know, my community has a little bit more ADD than David HaMelech, so we got to really break it down less than 11. That's a little too much for people to handle. So he breaks it down to 6, the Gemara says. And then the Gemara says, Micha, one of the great Nevi'im, says, you know, Yeridas HaDoros, it's hard for people to keep track of 6 items in their heads. We're going to break it down to 3. And it keeps going like that until finally the Gemara says that Yeshayahu HaMelech comes and breaks it down to 2. And the final passage in the Gemara is, if you read here, it says, Ba'Chabakuk. Chabakuk is one of the Nevi'im. It happens to be he's a mysterious Navi. We don't know much about him. The Ramban, another Rishonim, right? We don't know exactly when he lived, who he lived with, who his contemporaries were, if he ever lived. It's hard to really understand the story of Chabakuk. But either way, it says, Chabakuk comes along and he says, you want to boil all of Torah down to one premise, to one understanding? This is what it would be. And that is the following pasuk. V'tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh. You want to know what all of Torah mitzvahs is about. If you ask a Jew, why is it that you're living? What is it that we're here for? What am I supposed to accomplish? What am I supposed to overcome? The answer is, tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh. It's very simple. Chabakuk, the Navi, tells us very straight, lays it out for us and says, if you know that, then you appreciate everything else. And that sort of shows us how essential and how central and indispensable the mitzvah of emunah really is. So much so that the Rambam has an amazing comment. You know, the Rambam wrote Svarim about everything. He was so prolific. The Rambam wrote about every halacha, every Jewish experience, Tumah v'Tahara, even things that we don't generally experience now in our generation. But still, the Rambam wrote about everything. And with all of his master teachings, and with the eternal lessons and messages and teachings of the Rambam that we are still studying over 800 years later, the Rambam writes an amazing line in his introduction to Maseches Brachos. The Rambam says, Yakar be'enai lelamed me'ikari hadas v'ha'emuna yoser mikol asher alamdehu. What that means is, it is more endearing to me, it is more valuable to me to teach the lessons of emuna and Ikare Hadas than anything else I'll teach. So the laws of Shabbos are important to know. And the laws of Kashrus you have to know. And everything else that the Rambam laid out for us are very critical for a Jew to know. However, the Rambam says, most important to me and most beloved is when I'm given the opportunity to teach people about Ikare Hadas Vahemuna. And that really lays out for us how important this is. The Mishnah Brura writes that, you know, there are certain mitzvahs. We just had the Yom Tov season, so we only shake a lulav and esrog on Sukkot, and we only sit in the Sukkah on Sukkot, and we only blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. These are very time-bound mitzvahs that are very specific to whatever time of year we're up to. But the Mishnah Brura writes that there are six mitzvahs that we refer to as mitzvahs tamidios. Mitzvah tamidios means not when I wake up in the morning I have to say Kriya Shema, when I go to sleep at night I have to do something else, and not when I have this and that, no. Mitzvahs tamidios means something that is absolutely constant, something that is unlimited, something that is always going to continue to follow me at every moment of my life when I experience being a Jew. What are those mitzvahs? Well, the Mishnah Brura writes, Lo yafsiku me'al ha'adam afilu rega echad kol yamav. Not for one moment of my life am I allowed to forget any of these six principles. And what are they? Number one, he says, Lahamin sheyesh eloka echad ba'olam shehimtzi kol hanimtzos. Number one, we have a mitzvah to remember. It's a chronic, a perpetual mitzvah, constant. The Mishnah Brura writes, it is to believe sheyesh eloka echad, that we have one God, shehimtzi kol hanimtzos, that created everything that we see, that is behind all of our experiences. That's number one. Number two, he writes, we have to believe shelo namin b'shum Elohim zulaso, that you're not allowed to believe in any other power other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he goes on to explain all the different mitzvahs that I have, six mitzvahs that I have to think about all the time. Avas Hashem. I dare say if you would ask the average person that experiences life the way we do, how often do you think about Avas Hashem? How often do you think about the fact that there is nothing in the world other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is actually one of the mitzvos tamidios, which means it is relevant to us under all circumstances, at all times, and it's something we need to be mindful of. And that's why I always feel when we come to these parashios of Avraham Avinu, although it's something that all of us just take for granted, of course we believe in God, and of course we have emunah and bitachon, but it's something that gives us a renewed opportunity to just remind ourselves at least once a year of what this obligation is really about. There's an amazing passage in the Navi Yeshaya. If you look here, number Bays, the Navi Yeshaya is denouncing the Jewish people and he's condemning them. And he says, Yada Shar Konehu, an ox, an animal that's grazing, knows its owner, V'chamor Avuzba Alav, and a donkey knows exactly how to find the leader of the pact. But Yisrael lo yada, the Jewish people do not know. Ami lo hisbonan, my nation is not paying attention. What is that a reference to? Rabbi Yelapian explains what it means is the animal does not have to be taught certain things. There are certain reflexes, certain instincts that an animal has that are just so intuitive. It's just natural to the animal that it goes to the water stream. Who taught the animal where the water stream is? Does it have a map? Did anybody show the animal? No, it's instinctive. The animal knows this is where I go to get life. This is where I go to sustain myself. This is where I go to find the owner, to follow the place where I belong. The animal knows all of that instinctively. And Rabbi Yelapian writes, that is the condemnation of the Navi Yeshaya, where he says, Ami lo hisbonan. If it's so instinctive to an animal where to find life, how is it that for human beings it seems to be so unnatural? Why is it that for us it's so hard to find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's so hard for us to recognize and be very unequivocally clear about our relationship with Him? And that, the Navi Yeshaya says, is something that all of us need to think about. So much so that when Bilam HaRasha, the Shalah HaKadosh writes, that when Bilam HaRasha has this very unusual exchange with the donkey, and obviously it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicating with him, and the first thing that he says is, Chatasi ki lo yadati. I did an Avera, Chatasi, I did something wrong, ki lo yadati, because I did not know that this was God. I didn't realize that God was involved here. As the Shalah HaKadosh, imagine you have a child, he doesn't say this example, but imagine you have a child who runs into the street, a two-year-old kid. So it's dangerous. It's very dangerous. And the parent has to talk to the child and make sure it never happens again. Can the parent get upset at the child if the parent has never told the child not to do that? You can't blame a kid for not knowing the rules if I never told him the rules. So I can only be upset if we've spoken about this and you accepted and understood what I said and now you're breaking the rules. But over here, how could Bilam HaRasha say, Chatasi, I've done something wrong, ki lo yadati es Hashem, because I did not know that God was involved. Explains Inshallah HaKadosh, the answer is, there is no excuse for a person to live life and not know that God is involved. That's not an excuse. The same way there's no excuse for a person to say, I didn't know I was supposed to breathe. Nobody told me. Somebody covers over their mouth and their nose and says, they're suffocating. So you say, open up your mouth. Allow yourself to put air into your system. You say, oh, I didn't know. You can't blame me. What do you mean we can't blame you? That's obvious. Writes the Shalah HaKadosh, Bilam HaRasha says, Chatasi ki lo yadati es Hashem. My mistake is that I did not realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved. That's mistake number one. And that's really the premise of Emunah. The challenge is that Emunah is very dynamic. That Emunah is really something that is extremely complicated. And it's not at all a one-dimensional mitzvah. We have certain mitzvahs that we're asked to do them. And it's just clear what we're supposed to do. You blow shofar, you know what you do. You show up in shul, you listen. You shake the lulav, you sit in the sukkah. It's much more clear. But over here, we're dealing with something that is evolving, something that is dynamic. It's a relationship. And in all of our relationships throughout life, we always find that there are dynamics involved. And the same with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So today, what we're going to try to do is just to clarify a few of the major points regarding the mitzvah of Emunah and what it should mean to all of us. The first and most basic question is there actually a mitzvah to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Now you'll say, what kind of apikoros are you that you even ask such a question? Well, the answer is, it's not my question. It's a question of the Rambam and the Ramban and the Bahag and all the Gedolei HaRishonim wonder, is there actually a mitzvah to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What does that mean, is there a mitzvah? Let's read the Rambam together, number Gimel, where the Rambam makes it very clear. And this is actually, when the Rambam lays out the 613 mitzvahs, this is mitzvah Aleph. The first of all the Taryag mitzvahs, the Rambam says, is Hu hatzivoy asher tzivano b'ha'amanos ha'elokus, that God commanded us that we have to believe in a overall power, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'hu shenamen she'esham ila v'siba hu pa'al l'chal ha'nimtzayim. We have to believe that He is the reason behind everything that transpires in our world. V'hu amru, and that is what it means, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That is the first of the Aseret HaDibros, that God says, I am the God of Shamayim v'aretz, Asher Otzesi Osamei Eretz Mitzrayim. This is the God that we believe in. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So the Rambam says, this is the first mitzvah. What's a little surprising is, if you look in the other Rishonim, they do not count this as a mitzvah at all. And you ask yourself, how can there be such a glaring omission? When I'm enumerating the 613 mitzvahs, how did any of the Rishonim forget to count the mitzvah of Emunah? It doesn't make sense. This is something that the Ramban tries to address, and he says as follows, number Dalit. The answer is, says the Ramban, Hanir midatir shabal ha'alachos. Why is it that the Baal ha'alachos gedolos did not count Anochi Hashem Elokecha as a mitzvah? Doesn't seem to make sense. She'ein minyan taryag elag zerosav yis'ala she'gazur aleinu lasos. The 613 mitzvahs are directions. They are instructions. They are things that we need to follow. It's a manual. O minanu shalona aseh. Or some things in that list are a number of items that we are not supposed to do. Aval ha'emuna b'mitziyaso yis'ala. But believing in our Kadosh Baruch Hu, who came and showed us with Oso Samovsim, with all kinds of great imagery. The Ribono Shel Olam showed us His majesty with all the makos and all the great miracles that He has performed. Hu ha'ikar v'hashoresh shemimenu nolda ha'mitzvos. That is so axiomatic to what it means to be a Jew. It's so central. That doesn't count as a separate mitzvah. That is where all the mitzvos come from. The way the Rishonim say it is, it's so fundamental. If there's no mitzaveh, there cannot be a mitzuveh. If there's no one in charge, you can't say that I was instructed to do something. Who instructed you to do it? So the premise, before you get into everything, a mitzvah means, I am instructed. It is a tzivui. I am instructed to do this. Where did you get that instruction from if you don't believe that there's someone behind that instruction? So obviously, the fundamental principle needs to be Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And once you understand that, then we can start discussing 613 mitzvahs and what are the instructions and what are not, and how am I supposed to abide by them or not. But that has to be something that is so fundamentally ingrained into all of us. And if we assume that this is correct, if we assume that the Rambam is correct, that there actually is a mitzvah, there's a further disagreement what that means practically. And what I mean by that is the following. Should we all be living a life of basic and primitive understanding? There were many great Jews who lived a life that was referred to as Emunah Pshuta. And I'm sure many of us have encountered them. I just went to be Menachem Avil a few weeks ago. Somebody in the neighborhood who told me that both of his parents were Holocaust survivors. He said his mother didn't appreciate or understand anything about anything, but he said her emunah was emunah pshuta. So I asked him, what does it mean? He said he would ask her every so often, like, why did you remain Jewish throughout this horrific experience? And she said, what are you asking questions? What's the deal? Of course, what was the issue? There was no doubt. Now it happens to be, that shouldn't be taken for granted, because most of the people who survived did not have that attitude at all, and they shouldn't be faulted. It doesn't come as a given that you're going to walk away from a horrific experience like that or anything else and just assume that of course you're going to be a believer. But he said his mother was happy with that. She never asked questions, never had a problem. Not because she was so holy and so spiritual. He just said this was something that was just emunah pshuta. It worked. It worked for her. Just a very simple, straightforward belief. Is that the right way to do this? Is that the way it's supposed to be? Or perhaps we have an obligation to delve into the difficult and confusing and complicated reality of what it means to be a believer in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now again, not all of us are such major, philosophers, myself included. So how deep you're going to go is a good question. But do we even have to do that? Do we have to do anything? Is that part of our obligation? Is it part of the expectation? Or do you say, no, just emunah pshuta is the way it goes. Now it happens to be just on a practical level. My father often says, Rav Soloveitchik was a big proponent of women's learning. Forget about women's learning Torah Shebaal Peh. That was a side point. But in general, he tried to elevate the idea of women's learning. And just to appreciate what it means, if you just go back in history, Sarah Schneer was not that long ago. But before her, women were not given a Torah education at all. Women were not given a Torah education at all. That means Chumash they did not know. They did not know how to read. They were illiterate. They were not given the opportunity to taste what it means to be engaged in Talmud Torah. So everybody gets lost in, they should be learning Gemara, they shouldn't be learning Gemara, Torah Shema. It's not the point. The point is that women are now engaged in Talmud Torah. It is a phenomenon that did not exist for thousands of years. And it's an amazing gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given our generation. And Rav Soloveitchik said that part of what made him feel so passionate about this was that we live in a world where women are advancing in every other aspect of life, where women are going for degrees and women are going to school and women are becoming educated. It's not the way it was 100 years ago. So what are we going to say? A woman should have a doctorate in astrophysics and we're going to tell her, no, you're not allowed to open a chumash? Does that make sense? They're advancing every other aspect of their brain, every other aspect of their knowledge. But in Torah, we're going to say, no, we're going to make you stay where you are and you have no right to be engaged in this. Does that make sense? And the same, I feel, applies here. If we live in a generation where people are getting information about everything they want, you can just Google anything, you can look on Wikipedia and find out information about anything that's of interest to you. So what are we going to tell people? When it comes to Emunah, we're not going to discuss this? When it comes to Emunah, you have to just be totally blind, and we don't want anyone to think about this, we don't want them to ask any questions like, does that really make sense? Do we believe that our children are not going to look for the answers? They may be embarrassed or ashamed to bring it up with us because we're making that kind of culture for them. But do we really think when at their fingertips they have the ability to find everything in the world, they're not going to find this? And guess what? They're going to find the wrong answers. They're not going to find the answers that we're looking for them to have. So it's important that we engage our children, and it's important that we think about these issues and try to talk to them about things that might be on their minds. Again, it's a delicate balance. How much do we push it? How much do we not? But that's all of life is a balance. So This is, I think, a theoretical discussion. It's a theoretical conversation. I think when you live in the info age and you live in the generation that we do, where people are challenging every status quo that exists in every aspect of our civil life, they're going to challenge this status quo also. And we need to be prepared to answer those questions and to have those conversations. Now, sometimes answering a question means I don't have a full answer. For example, this week, unfortunately, our community suffered a tragic loss of Tuvia Lefkowitz, who was a really dear friend of mine. It's hard to say a dear friend. He was much older than I. But we had a very special relationship. And I gave a shiur in his office once a month for the last 6 years in Citibank. And he was really a very special person. And he was tragically killed right outside of shul. He was hit by a car. And it's a terrible tragedy. So we've been spending a lot of time with the family. And one of the grandchildren had a question for me this week. And she's 5 years old. And she said, you know, I was taught in school that Hashem loves everybody. So if he loves my Sabi, how did he kill him? It's a really good question. And I'm happy that a child is strong enough to ask that question. And what I told her is, I'm a rabbi. I learned in yeshiva my whole life. I grew up in the home of one of the Gedolei Hador. And guess what? I have the same question. I don't know the answer. And sometimes that's all our children need, just to be validated, that their question is valid, that their question is coming from a good place. They're not challenging Yiddishkeit. They're asking a question as any human being who's thinking is probably asking as well. Why should we make them feel ashamed that they're having such thoughts? It's nothing to be ashamed of. Just a few months ago, in the terrible tragedy of Meiron, there was a young man who was really struggling a lot to deal with what he saw. He was there, and he was a good friend of Donnie Morris. Donnie Morris was the young man from Teaneck who lost his life. And he was struggling a lot because he witnessed everything that happened, and he had terrible survivor's guilt, and he was questioning his emuna. And at some point, the advice that was given to him was he should go speak to a gadol. He should talk it through with someone. So I suggested that they send him to Rav Asher Weiss. I thought that he would have a very compassionate place in his heart for this discussion, as he does for many things, and he did. And I asked Rav Asher afterward how it went, and he said, you know, the boy told me that he's struggling and he believes that maybe he's not a believer anymore because, you know, he doesn't know where to put his thoughts. And Rav Asher Weiss said to him, that shows that you are a believer. If you care enough to be struggling with this, it means I do believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and because I believe in Him, I'm struggling with something that doesn't fit in the way I understand Him. If you didn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you would say, you know what? Forget it. Something's off, and therefore, I can't engage anymore. But that's not what's happening. The young man told him, I'm still keeping Shabbos, and I'm still davening every day, and I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm just very troubled. And that means that you are a believer. You're asking questions because it's meaningful to you, right? When a couple does discovery and trying to figure out in therapy what's going on in the relationship, they're doing discovery because they're trying to make it a more meaningful relationship because they care about the other. And I'm trying to figure out, why do I feel that this relationship right now is not where it should be? I care about it so much, so why is this happening? They're doing that, they're asking those questions because it's something that's worth questioning. It's something that's worth investing in. And the question here is as well that the Rishonim deal with, is my job in life, what is the ideal Maamin BaKadosh Baruch Hu? What is the optimal model of a believer? Is it the person who just has emunah pshuta, the person who just never thinks about it, never doubts, never asks questions, and whatever happens, they just say it's all good? Or is it the person who actually does a little bit of chakira, a little bit of questioning in their own mind and trying to, again, it doesn't mean challenging that I'm going to say, if I don't get the right answer, I'm out. It's not what it means. It just means discovery. Is that really the way they were supposed to do, with research and analysis to try to probe and inquire what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really means to us in the world? And this is a very important question. The Sefer Chovos HaLevavos has a beautiful discussion about this, where he says, call me, you could look here in number hey, Kol mi sheyesh b'koach sichlo. The Chovos HaLevavos was written 1,000 years ago. So this is an old source. Where he says, Kol mi sheyesh b'koach sichlo v'hakaroso lamod al birur mashakibel. Again, if I was raised in a religious home, or if I became a Baal or Baalas Tshuva later on in life, or I became a Ger or Gioris, and whatever foundations I have in my head are what they are. Whoever taught me, my parents, my aunts and uncles, my grandparents, my teachers, whoever it may have been, but whatever my foundation is, writes a Chovos HaLevavos, somebody who has the intellectual capacity, somebody who has the competence, somebody who has the ability and the maturity, lamod al birur mashakibel, to try to further understand and comprehend and grasp what it means that my parents gave me or my teachers have taught me, that is something that we're all supposed to do. And he writes, if a person just says, you know what, I'll just leave it like it is, it's too complicated to get involved with this, he says, that's not really the way that a person should live life. That is his suggestion. Then he writes, Achla das im anu chayavim lachgar al yichud bederecha iyonim lo. He says, the truth is, the more you understand, the greater and the deeper the love and appreciation that you're going to have. You know, I always laugh when you see a young couple, and I also was once engaged, and you see how they talk, oh, I love you, and I love you, and as somebody who's married, you say to yourself, they don't even know what it means to love each other, right? At an engagement, the chassan speaks or the kala speaks and they get on the microphone and they're so sweet and they say like, oh, I love you and you don't understand how much you mean to me. And we're all just laughing saying, no, you don't even understand that this person actually does not mean a lot to you, but hopefully in the future they will mean more to you, right? The more you get to know them, the deeper your appreciation and your love for them will become. Hopefully, that's what's supposed to happen. But that's what the Chovos HaLevavos writes. The more that we delve into the relationship and the more that we try to understand it, the greater the appreciation is. And he says that that's really what the Pasuk writes, V'yadata hayom, v'hashevosa el levavecha, that we have an obligation not only to recognize that there is a God in the world, but V'yadata hayom v'hashevosa el levavecha. It should be something that we really internalize, something that we really, really understand. On the other hand, we have the opinion of the Sefer HaChinuch. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes, again, the Sefer HaChinuch was in the 1300s, so he was 300 years after the Chovos HaLevavos. He lived in the time of the Ramban and the Rashba, in the time of all the Gedolei HaRishonim. So the Sefer HaChinuch writes that this is an impossible task. It doesn't make sense to expect that of a person. How, you know, you can expect me to blow shofar, you can expect me to eat matzah, to eat maror. You cannot expect me to get involved in a philosophical quest that is unattainable. And therefore the Sefer HaChinuch writes, it's inconceivable to me to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of the average person that they should go into all the philosophizing and figuring out and research and questioning and answering. We're not all in need of a discovery. If somebody needs that, you go do it. But otherwise, he says, how can you say such a thing? After all, he says, Avosenu sidru shulchan lefanenu. Our ancestors went into all of this, and the reason why they went into it is because in their generation, he says, there were many people who were questioning Judaism, and they had to really come up with the right answers. Now again, we today also have many people who question Judaism, and maybe that's why we need to do this as well. But the Sefer HaChinuch says, for the average person that's not living on a college campus, that's not engaging with all these people who are having trouble, and you're just living your life, writes the Sefer HaChinuch, why get involved? You think you're going to come to an understanding? You're never going to understand it as much research as you do. And therefore he argues that he really disagrees with this approach, and he does not think that it makes sense at all. Anyway, that is just a very interesting discussion. But in general, I find that the way the Chovos HaLevavos breaks down our obligation as Jews is just so beautiful, the way he categorizes it. Look at the next paragraph here, number Vav, where the Chovos HaLevavos explains to all of us the different segments and the different elements of what it means to be a Jew living and experiencing life the way we do. Chachmas HaTorah mischalekes lebeis chalakim. He just makes it so clear. And he says that there are two components, two general headings to everything that we do. Ha'echad mehem, one of them is ladas chovos ha'evarim. We have to know what our bodies need to do. So our bodies need to keep Shabbos. Our bodies need to keep Kashrus. Our bodies need to observe Taharas HaMishpacha. Our bodies need to do all kinds of different things. Those are bodily functions. Those are obligations that I have with my body. V'hi ha'chachma ha'niris. And that is something that is visible. It's obvious to anyone. You see me blowing shofar. You see me shaking the lulav. You see me sitting in sukkah. V'hasheni, he says, the second aspect of Jewish life is ladas chovos halavelos. To identify what is the obligation of my heart. What does God expect of my heart and my mind? V'heim hamatzpunim. And he says what's challenging about that is it's so concealed, it's ambiguous, it's obscure to us. That's not as obvious. You see a person, you don't know what's going on in their mind. You don't know what they're thinking, what they're feeling. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us that we have two general obligations. One is the Chovas HaIvarim, and we also have a Chovas HaLevavos. Ve'ein anu tzrichim levar ezeh b'mitzvos HaIvarim. He said, I don't need to go through a discussion about what the mitzvos are that we need to do actively. We all are familiar. However, he says, what we do need to think about is the Chovas HaLevavos. Skip down, actually turn over to the other side. Kfar nisbar lanu. Ki ha'adam mechubar minefesh v'guf. Every human being is created from two components. We have a body and we have a soul. U'shneyam itovas habori aleinu. And both of them are gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ha'echad nira v'hasheni enu nira. One component of who we are is visible. Everybody can see who we are and what we are, how tall we are, how short we are, what color hair we have, how many fingers, how many toes. Everybody can see that. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made our bodies visible and obvious to others, we have to serve Him in a visible and obvious manner. However, he says, we also have avoda hatzfuna. We also have a hidden avoda. Hagluya, what is the obvious? Chovas ha'ivarim kama ha'tfila v'ha'tzom v'ha'tzedaka. We fast on Yom Kippur, we daven every day, we learn Torah, we build a sukkah. However, he then morphs into a whole sefer that discusses the hidden part of our avodas Hashem. He chovas ha'levavos v'hu sheni yached ha'kel b'liboseinu v'shenamin bo u'v'torasa. That is a very personal experience to make a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'shenekabil avodasa. That I should accept my job that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me. V'nira oso, v'nichna mipana, we should be humble in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'nevosh mimenu, v'nehav oso, we should love Him. V'nivtach bo, we should believe in Him. V'nimsar nafshosenu alav, v'shanifrosh ma'asher yisna v'nesiachen ma'asenu lishmo. He says that is something that is not obvious to anyone. Nobody else will see exactly what that means to us. And the only one who will have a full understanding is ourselves. And he says that's the beauty of this mitzvah of Emunah b'HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's something that is very personal. It's something that is very specific. And it's something that is not at all obvious to anyone else who observes what it is that we do. It's something that we can do alone. It's a chovas halavavos. It's an obligation of our soul and of our heart and our mind, which means that it's concealed. It means that it's nobody else's business to be involved in. And that, I think, is just a beautiful way to break down the entirety of a Jew's experience. It's the Chovas HaEvarim, which is Gluya Lakol, which is obvious. And then there's the Chovas HaLevavos, which is far more personal. It's something that I have to be introspective and think very deeply about. One of the great Italian Jewish philosophers was the Ramchal. He lived in the early 1700s. What's amazing is, I assume all of us have heard of Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. He's the author of the Mesilas Yesharim. And the Ramchal, as famous and fundamental as his work was, do you know how old he was when he died? The contributions that he made are timeless, they're eternal. He passed away in 1746, but he was born in 1707. So a young man. Look what an everlasting contribution he made to the world. 40 years. But yet, these are svarim that we study and we think about all the time. So the Ramchal writes something very interesting. He has what he refers to as a Maimer HaVikuach. Vikuach means a disagreement, a dispute. A Maimer means he wrote a paper. He wrote a paper about a dispute. So what is this dispute? So he describes an imaginary conversation that took place. It didn't happen. But he describes in his mind what would be such a vikuach, what would be the dispute between a choker u'mekubal. When he says a mekubal, he doesn't mean the way we refer to a mekubal. He says choker means a philosopher who's curious, who's interested. And a mekubal means somebody who's grounded, somebody who understands the Jewish religion very well. And he is mekubal, he's somebody who accepted it from his forefathers and who understands it very well, who's now engaging in conversation with a philosopher to answer the questions of the philosopher. So he has a whole discussion about this imaginary conversation that took place and what the questions are, what the answers should be. A very fundamental piece of work. So here he writes the following. What happened when HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash? You know, we daven so many times a day. We want a Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim Ircha. Why? One of the principles of faith, one of the animamins, is we have to believe that we're going to once again have a Mashiach. We're going to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Why? Why is that so important? What happened? Again, there are many mitzvahs that unfortunately we can't do. Why don't we daven every day that we should be able to be Mafresh, Trumas, and Maisers again? I don't know, when was the last time you thought about that? Most of us don't care too much. Why don't we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I should be able to bring Karbanos? I don't know. It just doesn't bother me that much that we don't. So why? What? Again, right now I'm living at a time where I'm unable to observe those mitzvahs. Okay, so this is the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided I should be in the world. I don't have the opportunity to do everything. So why does it bother me that I don't have a Beis HaMikdash? What is lacking? What is not here? And he says, since that time, he quotes a pasuk in Eicha, "B'machshakim hoshivani." It's as if we are walking around in the dark. Anyone ever been to the Blind Museum in Israel? Right? So if you haven't, it's worth it. You begin to appreciate what it means to walk in the dark. First of all, it gives you a special sensitivity for somebody who has a poor eyesight, or for somebody who unfortunately is blind. And it makes you appreciate how much their struggle is and how much help we should be offering them. That's just as an aside. You know, just to like bring it home a little bit, I was talking to somebody who is unable to see, and this person told me that, you know, they're struggling a lot because they come to shul. They lost their eyesight later on in life. So they come to shul and their whole life they were davening, but they don't know every word of davening by heart. So they have to listen on a recorder to somebody who says every word of davening and they say it along with them. That's an amazing system. But this person spoke to me and said, you know, the problem is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the davening is so long. I can't have the headphones on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I can't turn on my recorder. So what am I supposed to do? I told this person, and I take it upon myself, that by next Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, or way in advance, I will make the recording for them of the whole Shemoneh Esrei. And he said if he has a few months lead time to listen to it and to familiarize himself with it, maybe he'll be able to remember it. I do think maybe we can ask a non-Jew to turn it on for him anyway, whatever, different question, but it just made me think, you know, something as simple as opening up a siddur and just reading the words. This person is so distraught over the fact he can't say Shemoneh Esrei Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And he said, I feel uncomfortable. I don't want to sit next to somebody and ask them to daven out loud so that I can follow every word. It's not comfortable for me. I don't need to always be dependent on other people. I'm dependent enough. I can't drive anywhere. I always need to be taken by other people. It just made me appreciate more and more the struggle that people live with and to think about what it is that we can do. Such a simple act. Take a recorder and sit down and record Shemoneh Esrei for this person. How long will it take me? Less than an hour. I don't have an hour in the next 12 months before next Rosh Hashanah to figure out how to help this person. I'll find an hour. Instead of following someone on Twitter, for endless and endless hours, which I don't. But instead of that, and the Netflix, and all the craziness that we waste our time, take one of those hours and record a Shmona Esrei for a person who is suffocating in shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur because they don't know what to do. Writes the Ramchal, do you know what it means to live a life in the dark? To live a life in the dark, go ask somebody who unfortunately is vision impaired. Somebody who is blind and cannot see. They know what it means to live in the dark. You have no color in your life. You can't even imagine. I remember speaking to Lavi Greenspan many, many times. We've spoken, such a dear friend. And Lavi Greenspan lost his eyes. And I remember when he was in NYU. And he used to be able to see. Unfortunately, he had a medical issue at 20-something years old, maybe a little younger, I don't remember, but he lost his eyesight. Since then, he's been blind for many, many years. And I remember he just said, like, he can't even visualize anymore what it means to have something that is pink or red or blue. Like, he doesn't know what it means. Everything's just black. Writes the Ramchal, that's what it means in the Pasuk in Eicha after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, b'machshakim hoshivani. So we have a very colorful world. And we're in this illusion that we believe, oh, everything's wonderful and we see everything and we understand everything. You ever had a conversation with a young child? I've had this in my children. And they think they understand everything. Right? I was once that kid also. I still am. You think you understand everything. And as you get older, you realize, no, there was a much bigger perspective. And when I thought those adults were crazy when they were telling me, no, you just don't understand it. You'll understand when you get older. It's true. You do understand when you get older certain things. Not everything. But you do understand certain things, that there's a larger perspective. I thought I saw everything, but I only saw one dimension. I'm missing 90% of the equation here. I'm missing everything. That's what it means to live a life without a Beis HaMikdash. It's b'machshakim hoshivani. We're living in the dark. We don't have an appreciation for what it means to be connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To be a person who has emunah and is close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a result of that is lacking as a fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. V'hine kulam mishtakim b'holchem achoshech hagadol hazeh b'chol hadoros. Here we are, trudging along. That is the severely damaging aspect of galus, that we live in confusion, that we are disoriented, that we don't have a clear understanding of what it means to be related to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this, if you want to read the Ramchal later, I see we're almost out of time, but it's an opportunity for us to think about not just what it means to have emunah, but also to think about how limited we are in our perspective because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. I'll close with one final thought, and that is, in the Haftorah of Parshas Nitzavim, one of the Haftorahs of the Shiva de Nechemta, which means 7 weeks we read different passages in the Nevi'im about the Nechama, about the consolation that we're all going to have for Churban Yerushalayim. And there Yeshaya HaNavi tells us in Perek Samach Aleph, Sos Asiz BaHashem, Tagel Nafshi BeElokai, I'll celebrate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time of a Geula. And it's a very celebratory Haftorah, it's a very beautiful Haftorah. It's supposed to give all of us Nechama, but the Dubna Magid gives such a beautiful mashal to interpret exactly what it means, and he says, there's a young child who goes to a wedding for the first time in his life, and he's so excited, and he doesn't really know what he's going to, but, you know, his parents tell him we're going to something really exciting, and someone's getting married, he doesn't even know what it means to get married. Anyway, he walks into the wedding, and he's trying to get his bearings, and he's looking around, and he notices that there's a chuppah, and he sees that everybody else is sitting on the sides, and there are just two people standing under this canopy. He can't figure out what's happening. So he runs up to the chassan, and he says to him, you know, you look really happy. I'm just curious, why are you so happy? And the chassan turns to him, he says, I'm the chassan. Of course I'm happy. He says, I don't even know what that means. I've never been to a wedding. I don't know what's happening here. So he says, tell me, why are you so happy? He says, why am I so happy? Never in my life have I worn a tuxedo like this or a pair of shoes like this. I just feel amazing. And we're taking all these pictures and the band. I mean, look at this. It's incredible. Okay. Turns to the young lady who's standing next to him and he says, you know, I just spoke to this man and he told me why he's so excited. I'm curious. You also look really excited. Tell me, what are you so excited about? What's making you so happy today? And she says, what's making me so happy? I'm the kala. He says, what is that? Never been to a wedding. I don't know what that means. And she says, I'll tell you exactly what it is. I am wearing the most beautiful gown. I feel like a princess. I got my makeup done by a professional this morning, and my hair is all up, and it's made so nicely, and I've just never worn jewelry like this, like all these gifts that I'm getting. It just feels amazing. I'm loving this. Right, so Dubna Magid, how long is that marriage going to last? If under the chuppah all they're focusing on is, you know, the new tuxedo and the gown and the jewelry, and they totally miss what is exciting about this moment. Right, so Dubna Magid, we talk so often about Geula and return to Eretz Yisrael and Hamachzor Shechinas Litzion, and oh, it's going to be euphoric. What's going to be euphoria about it? Some people believe I'm never going to have to work a day in my life again. It's going to be money falling from the trees, and I'm not going to have to do anything. I don't know. Is it true? Is it not true? I don't know. Some people believe no one's ever going to get sick again once Mashiach comes, right? You always hear somebody gets sick. Oh, we need Mashiach. Yeah, what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? I'm just curious. I don't know. Does it say anywhere that no one's going to get sick again or we're not going to have hospitals? I'm not sure. I don't think so. Sorry. I just killed a whole lot of beliefs, but I don't know. The Rambam says there are a whole lot of things about the coming of Mashiach that we won't know until we'll get there. So everybody has in their minds these images of all the wonderful things that are going to happen. Some of them might be true, some of them might be realistic, some of them not. I don't know. But writes the Navi Yeshayah, don't forget, although it's true the Chasan and Kala standing under the chuppah are excited about the fact that she's wearing a gown and he's wearing his suit and everybody's doing their thing and they have pictures and they have a band and it's all great. But don't forget why we're here. This is exciting most importantly and primarily because I have an opportunity to now have a meaningful relationship with this person that I'm standing next to. That's why I'm celebrating. Writes the Navi Yeshayah, don't forget, we look forward to a geula, but it's because sos asis b'Hashem. When we once again have a Beis HaMikdash, I'll have the opportunity once again to celebrate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Until that time, b'machshakim hoshivani, like the Navi says, I'm walking in the dark. I don't know where to put myself. I don't have a complete understanding or appreciation for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in my life right now, because I'm in Galus. And while I'm here without a Beis HaMikdash, it's impossible to have that perspective. And that is why I'm excited. And that is why I look forward to a Beis HaMikdash. Emuna is so important. It's such an indispensable part of all of our lives. Unfortunately, because it's so much a part of our lives, we may not spend the requisite time or headspace giving the attention to Emuna that it deserves. And this is an opportunity that we have, as we mentioned, as we once again read the parshios about Avraham Avinu, and we think about his courage and his tremendous tenacity and his emuna under all circumstances and every acceptance that he had of HaKadosh Baruch Hu under every condition that he endured in his life. With all of that, we realize how lacking we are in any level of understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we can ever attain. And that's why we look forward to having that experience of being reunited with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the most profound way when we have a Beis HaMikdash once again, when we return to Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. It gives meaning to what it is that we daven for every day. It's a Chovos HaLevavos. It's the primary mitzvah that all of us have to observe every day, but we cannot observe it properly because we simply don't have that level of understanding. And that's what we look forward to. That is what we all pray for. And that is what we excitedly ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for every day, so many times throughout our tefillah, that once again we should be reunited with an understanding, with an appreciation, with that fundamental principle of how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, of how much we appreciate Him, and of what this very deep and special relationship with Him means and is supposed to signify in all of our lives. Amir Tzashem will continue next week. I don't know what we're going to continue with, but we'll see. I look forward to seeing everybody. It should be probably about Pirkei Avos next week. For those who are interested, this Wednesday evening, as I mentioned, we're starting a new series at 8 o'clock to 8:30. For any men in the audience or family members, we have the Smichas Chaver at 8:45. So plenty of opportunities for everybody. I wish all of you a wonderful day.